number 12724, Reel 1.
Mr. Tremble, Reel 1. Whereabouts were you born, please?
Liverpool.
Which year was that?
1924.
What did your father do for a living?
He was a carter on the docks at Liverpool.
Did you go to school in Liverpool?
Yes, all of my schooling was completed in Liverpool, leaving at 14.
So that was in 38?
1938.
Did you get a job?
Immediately. Yes.
Doing what?
I was in Messrs. William Crawford's, the biscuit manufacturers. I went into the workshops on a temporary, on a pre-apprenticeship training scheme. And as soon as I was 15, began my apprenticeship as a motor engineer.
Did you see anything of the bombing of Liverpool?
I was involved in it very deeply.
In what way?
My area, the Everton area, is quite close to the docks area, and I joined the Home Guard and was sent out to help as a result of the bombing that was taking place wherever I was required.
How old were you when you joined the Home Guard?
As soon as it began as local defence volunteers, I was 14 and a half.
Which year was that? 1940?
Into Walton. I was in the headquarters was in the tram sheds at Walton District, Liverpool, Carisbrook Road. It was about a mile from my home to go to that place, which I used to attend two or three evenings a week. And then when the bombing started, we were just made use of by the air raid wardens group and so forth. Civil defence in general.
Was it called the Walton Home Guard?
No, it was just a Home Guard. It was local defence volunteers. It was just all we had was an armband around our arm, a tape thong around our waist, and a bayonet, and we were armed. And but our job was mainly, at that time, all the youngsters that were in it were mainly going and helping the ambulance services, the police, whoever wanted help, we were sent out to, and became quite involved into extricating people from houses that had been hit or partially demolished and so forth. And in the Everton district, where I actually lived, there were four streets just wiped off the face of the earth by landmines dropped at top and bottom. And our street, which was in connecting street between those, got away with reasonably light damage in comparison. But Towson Street, I was into the cellars of the houses.
What did you find then?
Bringing out the injured. Bringing out the dead. People I'd gone to school with. Families I'd grown up with. Pretty horrific.
Can you remember the names of those streets?
Yes. I know the names of gardeners. There was a gardener family. I brought out a daughter who we thought we'd saved, but died within a couple of hours. There was the Rileys. They lost three of their children. The Rowleys, the Rowley family, the boys and I, they were different religion, but Mrs. Rowley was like another mother to me. I lost my mother when I was 11. Mrs. Rowley was like another mother.
What religion were you?
Church of England. And they were Catholic, but it made no difference. I went and ate in their home whenever it was possible. whenever I was invited. I grew up with their sons, and she lost two of her sons in a blitz. There was a Melling family. They lost one daughter. The Mays, Rosie May, who remember Rosie? Very precarious young lady even then. But she was killed. There were so many. Venmore Street, the Carhills. Chucky Carl came walking up the street with his arm blown off. Chucky and I went to school in the same class. There was nowhere I could use any pressure point to stop the flow of blood. I had pads on the stub, the shoulder, which all it was, pads on it, bound it round tight, whatever we could bind it with, bandages, bits of shirt, whatever we could get. Took him into the little grocer shop on the corner of the street. Mrs. Golding, Edna Golding, she sat with him. I ran to the warden's hut, which was about half a mile away, and asked to send for an ambulance to get Chucky into hospital, but the situation was hopeless. There were so many people injured, so many killed in the area, that there wasn't any transport available to take Chucky to hospital. He died. Lost him.
Was Everton the worst hit area in Liverpool?
One of the worst. I wouldn't say the worst hit, not by any standards. The low down Vauxhall Road, Scotland Road, all those that actually moved up parallel to the Dock Road were badly damaged. And across to Bootle, Bootle was very badly damaged. The south end of Liverpool got a reasonable, what do you say, still an amount of damage that caused a lot of problems. But the Everton area, Everton, Netherfield, Vauxhall, Bootle, all those areas of Liverpool really badly, badly battered. That was the main industrial and docks area. My father by then had joined the Royal Air Force himself, and he'd gone to the balloon barrage section. He was occupied in putting up these balloon barrages whenever the raids came. He travelled all over the country in various sites. Kyle of Lochalsh, over in Londonderry, Northern Ireland, and down on the Thames, in the River Hull here, River Humber here, over Merseyside. He travelled about quite a lot with his balloon barrage. He became an instructor eventually when they started to bring the WAFs in, the Women's Royal Air Force, in to learn the job. And
was the bombing of Liverpool at that time indiscriminate, or do you think it was targeted?
I believe, and I have grown more to believe since, that it was definitely targeted initially, but there was the jettisoning of the bombs by aircraft that had found that they couldn't actually bomb target, and on the way off from target, they just dropped them wherever they wished. That became the indiscriminate bombing, where the residential areas were really plastered, you know. At Everton, we're on a hill. It's one of the highest points of Liverpool. And you could stand on the main road, Robson Street, and watch the sticks of bombs and the directions in which they were travelling. and you knew when to get out of the way or when to get down or whatever, you know. And you begin to, you learn to count the number of bombs that were in each stick. So that you could say, you know, well, there's another one to come, or there's no more, that's it, and whatever. And
how many would be in a stick?
Average on six. Six small, what, say 250 pounders maybe, or 300 pounders. I know they were kilograms. I never got to know the actual weight of them then. Wasn't that interested in that, only interested in escaping what they would do and then making good whatever they had done afterwards, whatever crews. I became a sergeant in the Home Guard eventually. And that was it was all within a matter of months, this. It's rapid promotion and everything, you know, because people, once they saw what was happening, some people couldn't stomach it, some people couldn't stay with it. And others went off into the services, you know, they just found that they were, or felt maybe that they were going to be better employed in the actual services than in the Home Guard. As soon as they became old enough, they were going. As a matter of fact, it was every boy's desire at the time to get into the regular service or the emergency services that were being called up then, you know.
How did the fire brigade cope with the fires in Liverpool?
With what they had, I think they absolutely performed miracles. The aircraft gunners were machine gunning the fire crew as well as trying to extinguish the fires. And I was at Tate & Lyle's sugar factory when that got hit. And that was burning so badly because of the sugar. It's a natural fuel to the fire. And there was a group of firemen there with an emergency fire tender, AFS. And I actually saw them being machine gunned as I came up the road with a group of Home Guardsmen to give some hand. They were machine gunned, and I saw four men fall. And not realizing quite at that moment what was the cause of them falling. You hear the screaming and a tick-tick-tick business, you know, the noise of a chattering of things, but you didn't connect, you didn't sort of tie it up until we got there. And there's the marks of the bullet holes in the walls where they'd hit the walls, and these lads were lying in front of these. So they said it's aircraft machine guns. And it was again the same thing when the Liverpool Cathedral, the Anglican Cathedral at Liverpool, was hit. And the people that were going there to extinguish some fires were machine gunned again. And this happened frequently throughout Liverpool. One heard of the gunners of these aircraft machine gunning. Wherever there was sufficient light to see that there were people moving, they were machine gunning them from the aircraft. It was war, and there's no doubt about it, and they had taken it to their extremes, as you might say. You know, this was putting those people out that were stopping them from carrying out the full sort of means of their bombing. You know, they wanted to destroy, and these people were trying to preserve against what they were trying to do, and they had no discretion and no knowledge that they were volunteers, most of them, auxiliary fire servicemen. But, you know, it didn't even have to be firemen, anybody at all. If they were illuminated and there was an aircraft flying over, they were machine guns. It was a regular practice. And when the ammunition ship went up in the dock down there, the devastation that caused, it blew docks flat, rock buildings, rigging, superstructures. Everything of ships was ripped off, and it just kept on banging away, and they were down there trying to keep the flames to a minimum.
Which dock was that?
Down at the, I'm not quite sure of the actual name of the dock, but it, oh dear me, the ship's name began with an M. I wasn't very good at names at that time. But it was what they called the the Victoria Wellington dock area. There were about four or five docks within the Wellington dock group, and this was, the name just shot through then. Still escapes me. I can't think of the name of that ship. It began with an M, I know that. And it did a lot of damage. And the firemen that were trying to do the jobs there, the aircraft were actually flying up and down above them and machine gunning them while they were doing it. All the rescue services that were there trying to carry out protection or whatever were machine gunned, and it was a sort of a gun run alley, as you might say. It was all brightly lit, there were fires all over the place, everything was burning, and they were machine gunned. There were a lot of people killed just by machine gunning.
Which month did the ship blow?
It's May.
Was that when the worst bombing was?
That was just about the worst part of it all. We had some bombing in 40, but very small, and I think maybe that was not part of a plan, just something that they were over there and they could see there was something there, so they dropped the bombs. I don't think we were really a target at that time, unless they were trying out, see where they could get to, because it was said at the beginning of the war, they'll never get this far with their aeroplanes anyway, over to the west coast of England. But they did, as we know.
What was public morale like in Liverpool under the bombing?
Something that amazed me, that made me very proud to be a Scouse. There was devastation, their homes were gone. They were living in big shelters beneath St. George's Hall. Permanent soup kitchens and everything else were down there. But you could go there any time of the night, whatever, day, and they'd be singing. They wouldn't be downhearted. They'd come out and they'd look at the damage and everything else the next morning. They'd get off to the work, pick up the bits. Sometimes the works weren't there, so they'd get on with something else, helping somebody out. The morale of the Liverpudlian at that time was so high, it was amazing, almost unbelievable. And something which gave you quite a bit of heart to do what you had to do yourself.
Did you ever come across defeatist sentiment?
Not to my knowledge. Not to my memory at all. There were just some of them, I wish to hell they'd go away, you know, bloody Germans and all that sort of thing. But it was not a case of, we can't stand this anymore, let's pack it up. I never heard that. All through my service life, even afterwards, I've never come across any defeatists.
Was there any feeling that the RAF ought to do the same in Germany?
There were a number of people believed at the time that we were capable of inflicting some revenge, or letting them taste a bit of their own medicine, is the way they put it at Liverpool, give them a dose of their own muck. There was that sort of thing always there. It's about time somebody else had a smack of this, give them some of their own back and all that shit. But I think at the time everybody realised that our own air force was somewhat depleted. We didn't have the range of aircraft that the German services had, German army had. We didn't have the range of bombers, Whitley bombers, their range was very, very restricted. Then the Hamdens and the Wellingtons came along. They were a little bit better. But it wasn't until the Lancaster, Stirling and Lancaster came, that any real ability to strike back with any great amount of bombs was capable of being carried out.
What did people think of the air crews who were carrying out the bombing of Liverpool? Did they hate them?
They were heroes.
No, the bombing
of the bombing of Liverpool. There was no... I don't recall any personalised or personal feelings relating to those people, other than all the Germans were related to purely as German bastards. You know, that was the end. That was a that was the expression that was the... That just classified them all. No, and there were occasions when they did get shot down, crashed and so forth, and not at any time. I mean, I was at the police station on Westminster Road on one occasion when two German aircraft crew were brought in, and they had not been badly treated by anybody. They were not badly treated by the police. Matter of fact, they were given cocoa when they were brought in, and cigarettes and everything else. You know, they were prisoners. They were no more going to be bombing, and I think they were just as relieved to be out of it as the people that had realised that that was one aircraft that wasn't going to be bombing, you know. No outward, no physical signs of hatred, just verbal mainly, against the thing, but they were carrying out their duties just the same as our lads were having to carry out theirs wherever they were, and that was the feeling.
Was there a sense of national unity during the bombing?
Very much so. Very much so. And when the Queen Mother, as she is now, came to Liverpool, the fervour that with which she was greeted was something to see. The streets were all littered with the rubble and so forth. And she came down amongst the people round the Scotland Road area of Liverpool, walked amongst them, and everybody went to Scotland Road to see if they could see the King and Queen.
Did you go?
Oh, yes. I wouldn't miss it.
But, did you use the shelters during the bombing?
No. I don't know whether I suffered at that time. I still do, possibly, from a claustrophobic frame of mind, but I did not like being entrapped. I did not like being confined. Even then, I felt that if I was above, on the ground, I could fend for myself a bit better than being there. And there were a number of direct hits on shelters throughout the town that wiped out a lot of people. Broad Green was one, and it was quite a large shelter. A lot of people were killed in that. And all they could do with that one was just fill the hole. They bulldozed extra land over the top, and it was made a communal grave. And later on, I think they did take some of the bodies out and buried them separately, but during the war, that was made a communal grave, Broad Green. The block of flats been built on it since, just by the Gardener's Arms, the public house, quite a lot of people. And there were so many of these shelters that were direct hits, this sort of added fuel to my way of thinking, that you're penned in together and there's no way out. While you're free, there's a chance. And whether it was true or not, I'll never know, but I was hit only once with a piece of flying stone, and it bounced off my tin helmet, which the Home Guard had issued me with, and it was just a piece of stone. And that told me, well, fortunately enough, I'm in the right place, I'm outside, I've less chance of being hurt myself, you know. My grandparents who brought my sister and I up from when I was 11 and she was 6. They were always in a shelter, and I used to go and visit them on occasions to see if they were all right, to see if they needed anything. They were in a shelter when the Towson and Everton Street, Venmore Street, were flattened by the landmines, and they were fortunate. They didn't get hurt, but they were evacuated immediately afterwards. They went over to live in Northwich in Cheshire with my sister, and I stayed there. I committed myself to doing the work with the Home Guard, so I stayed there. I lived in the house. It was damaged. Part of the roof was knocked off, but tarpaulin sheet was put over that, and we were able to carry on, you know. And shortly afterwards, I'd already applied to go in the Air Force, but had been told I was too young. But my name and address had been taken, and I got a letter as soon as I was old enough to go back. And I got a letter late 41 to go along to Renshaw Hall and present myself for a medical examination. I had two eyes, two ears, a nose and a mouth, two arms, and it was in. And when they asked me if I had a preference of service, which they were still doing at the time, I said, oh yes, my father's in the Air Force, I wish to go. And I was put into the Air Force. And that's what this started off.
What did you think of the training you got in the Air Force?
I felt very satisfied, very pleased with it, really, because although I'd had a reasonable mechanical, a very high standard of mechanical instruction at William Crawford's, they were perfectionists, to say the least, in all of the trade sections in Crawford. And I felt I was somewhat advanced on some of the laddies that were being given these jobs to do, that had been sent into the trade groups. I was somewhat advanced, but the instructions I was getting was by no means of a quality that you could say wasn't even worth considering. It was good enough to bring those lads up to a standard that they could carry out whatever work was essential, was required of them when they were finished the training. The basic training everybody went through, that was no problem. Marching, shooting and all that sort of thing. We didn't do a lot of shooting because we were not being expected to do rifle firing. We were tradesmen, so we were not expected. It was only later on they realised it could be quite useful if we were trained up to standard, and then these things came in.
Were you a fitter or a rigger or what?
No, mechanic. Driver, mechanic.
When did you first join your first operational squadron?
I didn't join any squadron until I got overseas. The situation at Blackpool, when they trained us all, they were preparing drafts for overseas. And I was sent to a little place called RAF Rosnesny in North Wales, near Wrexham. There was no requirement for me in my trade there.